This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, 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 you think it's the end of the year and it's all over. I'm sorry. Tonight at Footscray Hotel, no, I'm not doing a boring historical presentation of a radical moment in Australian history, but we're getting get together. Have a drink, bring food to eat, so and we'll be thinking about topics for next year. We'll restart, I think, in March next year. But if you're interested in esoteric, important radical presentations about radical history in this country, and obviously you need to know the, you need to understand the past to understand the present. If you go to josephtoscano.com, there's about 20 different presentations on important historical moments in Australian history. That's the first thing. So tonight, 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. Knees Up Mother Brown at the Footscray Hotel, 48 Hopkins Street. Make sure you bring some food to share. That you can't buy food at the Footscray Hotel. As I keep telling people, that hotel is so traditional. The carpets aren't beer soaked because they're so threadbare you can see the boards. So come along tonight, just for a social gathering for the end of the year and to discuss the possibility of topics for next year. Now, tomorrow it gets worse. Midday to 3 p.m., Talk Back with Attitude is having their picnic, and obviously all listeners to the Anarchist World this week are invited. It's midday to 3 p.m. Where else but the Parliamentary Gardens? No, not inside Parliament House. We don't get an invitation. But the little gardens with the fountain next to Parliament House at the corner of Lonsdale Street and Spring Street. That's Lonsdale Street and Spring Street. Not Latrobe Street like some people thought last year and they wandered around looking for us for ages. Now, if you're into architecture, there is a very interesting 19th century urinal at the corner of Spring and Lonsdale Street. And if you see that, you know the Parliamentary Gardens are behind it. Okay, so bring food and drinks to share. You know, we're not about, we don't do things for people. We expect people to, you know, self-activate. It's a terrible word. We expect them to participate, so bring food and drinks. And if by some chance you are, you know, you play a ukulele or an accordion or a guitar or can sing or do poetry, come along tomorrow, Thursday, the 18th of December. Now, don't forget the Tuesday, the 20th of January, midday to 1 p.m., is the first stage of the Tanaminua Morbohina commemorations at the Tanaminua Morbohina Monument at the corner of Franklin Street and Victoria Parade. Now, the first hour of the ceremony will be broadcast live on Community Radio 3CR. It is Tuesday. It is the 20th of January. It is still school holidays. It's a great way to educate children about this country's past and how the country was created and the I've been given the wind up. So 20th of January, here we go. The sacred cows have come in. They're all festive. They're firing fireworks in the studio. It's a bit dangerous, but we'll see what we can do for you. Here we go. Sydney's
evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name's Joseph Toscano. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, anarchos without rulers. It's about creating a society without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people as we see every day? Inequalities in power and wealth. That's right, inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve, share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Very simple concepts. Now, life can be difficult and it can be complex. And here at the Anarchist World This Week, we try to analyse things as they happen. There's no point giving you, you know, huge historical, philosophical stuff. What we need to be able to do is actually look at what's happened and make some sense of it. And now what we've seen in the last few days is another atrocity. Another human atrocity. This time on Australian soil. And this time, conducted by fellow Australians. And that's the key. An atrocity conducted by fellow Australians against Australians on Australian soil. It seems, looking at the available evidence, the two individuals involved in carrying out this atrocity, one of whom was killed, were ISIS supporters, if not members of ISIS. Now, a lot of people have felt that the ISIS threat disappeared once they were eradicated from Iraq. If there is one group, one organisation on the planet which has caused more harm and misery and death among Muslims, it's ISIS. It's a Islamic fundamentalist group who believes its interpretation of the Quran is the only way that people should live. Everybody else is an apostate and a target for execution. And if you look at the brutality of that regime when they control southern Iraq and Basra, you begin to understand the extent of the lunacy of their ideas. It's quite likely that if they ever took hold in Australia, which won't happen, that 80% of the population would be executed because they're atheists or Shia Muslims or Christians or Jews or agnostics or gay, transgender, you name it. And that's the type of organisation. But the reality is, there are people in our society, and let's not forget that of the two gunmen, one was actually born in this country and the other one had lived in this country for over 30 years and made his life here. So what can we make of this atrocity? And how is this atrocity being used by various segments of the Australian community and the international community to push their line? And what can be the consequences of us remaining silent during this exceptionally difficult period? Now, it's quite obvious that the killers were basing their actions on an ideology. And that ideology led them to believe that certain sections of the community had no right to exist because they didn't support their ideological wet dreams. And what we saw on Sunday was a blatant anti-Semitic attack where people of the Jewish faith were targeted for one reason, for being Jews, not because of their political opinions, not whether they were Zionists, not whether they were, you know, ultra-Orthodox or Orthodox, or they were secular Jews. And they were targeted because they were part of a group which this ideologically based group, which uses religion or their interpretation of religious beliefs as the basis for their brutality, caused untold damage, which will linger for years, if not generations. People have lost brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. Others have been wounded, many critically. For what? For attending a public ceremony of the Jewish faith. So, as we learn more about this atrocity, it's not a tragedy, it's an atrocity. As we learn more about this atrocity, there are elements in Australian society and overseas who are trying to use the murders of these 15 innocent civilians for their own ideological gains. And the fact is that we are seeing pressures being placed on the federal government by sections of society, many organised groups, to try to blur the line, conflate the difference between anti-Semitism, Zionism, the Israeli state, and ISIS, and Muslims. And there will be people in our society which will take advantage of this atrocity to promote their myopic, divisive, ideological viewpoints. Some will be well-known politicians, and I'm not just talking about divided nations, but many members of the Liberal Party. Others will be shadowy groups that support the brutality and the atrocities that are occurring in Gaza by providing financial support and even young men to fight that fight. Others will try to conflate the Palestinian activists who have been disgusted by the atrocities which are being committed by a pariah state, the State of Israel, and Palestinian men, women and children, which has resulted in the deaths of over 70,000, about 25% children, the wholesale destruction of almost 90% of every building in Gaza. And let's not forget, Gaza is just half the size of Sydney or Melbourne. The targeting of journalists with over 250 killed. The targeting of doctors and medical facilities. The use of starvation as a weapon of war. The fact that their Prime Minister has been designated a war criminal, and the list goes on and on. And what people are trying to do, people who should know better, is somehow link the struggle that many Australians have been involved in over the past 2 years to highlight the brutality and the atrocities that are occurring in Gaza and to a less extent in the West Bank as anti-Semitism. Now, obviously, the attack on Sunday was an anti-Semitic attack which was carried out by individuals who either belonged or pledged allegiance to ISIS, an ideologically driven group that uses religion or their interpretation of a particular brand of religion to justify their atrocities. That's obvious. The dilemma is, for everybody who's been involved in the Palestinian struggle, who understands that what's been happening in the state of Israel and the occupied territories over the past 70 years is a blight on humanity, what we are seeing just days after the atrocity, before even most of the people have been buried, who were killed have been buried, what we are seeing is a push which conflates any criticism of the state of Israel with anti-Semitism. Now, there are many, there are many Jewish people, and I know many, who think what's happening in Gaza is barbarism, who believe there's another way. There are many Jewish people who support the Palestinian struggle. Not the majority, but a significant number. There are many Jewish people who are secular. There are many Jewish people who are unhappy with the way Zionist elements in Australian society have been trying to equate what's happening, have been trying to justify what is happening in Gaza and the West Bank as something that is justifiable. So we are in a difficult position. People who've supported the Palestinian cause are in a difficult position. The first thing to remember, it's not Palestinian organisations which carried out these atrocities. The second thing to remember is that it is not a criminal act to be concerned and show you concerned about atrocities which are being committed in the name of the State of Israel. But the problem is we will see increasing attempts by political figures, cultural figures in our society, who somehow believe their political fortunes will be promoted by trying to pressure the federal government to pass legislation which equates anti-Semitism with Zionism and the Israeli state. Very few people equate ISIS with the over the billion Muslims which live on planet Earth. And there is no reason for us as a people to be criminalised for talking about, acting about what is happening in Gaza. The atrocities which occurred are atrocities which weren't committed by Arabs, of people, you know, Palestinians. The atrocities which occurred in Australia were committed by an individual who was born in India, has lived in this country for over 30 years, and an individual who was born in this country. So we should be asking ourselves, what has created such hatred? If we cast our mind back a few years, why did so many Australians, almost 100, die in Syria and Iraq fighting for ISIS? So it's not a time for despair. It's a time to show some respect for the people who are killed and injured through no fault of their own. They were murdered because they belong to a particular group of people. And we see over and over again attempts by different sections of the Australian community to make political capital of this. Now, the other thing we need to remember, and I'm old enough to remember the Port Arthur massacre, where over 35 Australians were killed, murdered on that day. The fact is that the gun laws, which were introduced by the Howard regime, have been watered down state by state, year after year, when you've got parties like the, what is it, Farmers, Fishers and Shooters Party, pushing for the deregulation of gun ownership. And let's not forget, the two individuals who were involved in this atrocity had legitimate access to the guns. The father had a license to 6 high-powered guns in an urban setting. And there are people in urban New South Wales that have 70 guns legally. I understand one individual has 342 guns legally. And what's fascinating and sickening at the same time is how we're seeing people like John Howard and the Liberal Party, and to a lesser extent currently the National Party, push back against the tightening of gun laws. It doesn't matter how much hate the perpetrators of this atrocity had. The fact is, if they didn't actually have access to firearms, the damage that had been caused, the deaths that had been caused, would not have occurred. It would never have occurred. And to a significant degree, what happened on Sunday is a direct result of the watering down of gun laws. And people have been talking about this now for decades. And it's interesting to see elements of the Liberal Party balk at the idea of tightening gun laws. Balk at the very idea. Days, just a few days after this atrocity occurred. Now, the state cannot prevent atrocities from occurring, as we saw in the Bondi shopping centre when 5 innocent individuals were stabbed to death. If somebody, whether it's because of a psychiatric issue or because of a political ideology, decides the only way that they can, you know, live or perpetuate themselves is through mass slaughter, it's very difficult to prevent that. But it's much easier to regulate the flow of guns in the community. We see in the United States of America what happens when the flow of guns is not regulated and the gun lobby has exceptional political influence and power. We have seen an increasing influence and power of the gun lobby in this country. And it's important at this critical time that legislation be put in place to ensure that people should have access to a gun only if they need that access to a gun, not because they want to protect themselves. Because every one of the guns that were used in the atrocity which was committed on Sunday were legal under the current legislation in New South Wales. They were totally legal. It's sickening to think there are elements in our society, as I said before, who conflate anti-Semitism with Zionism and the actions of the Israeli state, and people who conflate the actions of ISIS-motivated individuals with the Muslim religion, with Islam. But what's even more disgusting is the fact that there are elements in our society, some in high political office, who are more than willing to shrug their shoulders at the atrocities which occurred, the atrocity which occurred on Sunday, and resist any attempts to tighten gun laws. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. It's something we all need to reflect on. We need to think about. And the fact is that if you have been involved in Palestinian actions, pro-Palestinian actions against the Israeli state, it doesn't mean that you're anti-Semitic. There are many Jewish people involved in that struggle. There are many other people involved in that struggle. Now, I find it personally hard to understand religious people, religiously motivated people, especially religiously motivated people who think, you know, physically destroying somebody from another religion will somehow open the gates to heaven for them. I find it exceptionally hard to understand that. But I can understand the hatred which can be caused by the unilateral actions of a pariah state. States like Russia, states like Israel, organisations like the Rapid Defence Forces, the militia in Sudan, which use terror, indiscriminate terror, to promote their philosophical, ideological, national viewpoints. It's extraordinary. So we shouldn't think that these atrocities which occurred have conflate them with important issues like the actions of the Israeli state, the actions of ISIS, the part Zionism plays in the ability of the Israeli state to get away with mass murder. It's one thing to see deluded individuals taking up arms to promote some type of, you know, deluded ideological, religiously motivated viewpoint. It's another thing to see all the apparatus of a state being used to annihilate an opposition. You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. Let's move on. Now, I understand the Treasurer needs some advice. He's handing down, I think, he's not handing down the budget, but a budget something, you know, before the budget. A little bit like, how shall I put it? Pre-coital stimulation, all right? That's what he's talking about, getting us ready for the budget. And like all of us, they've got a problem. Ingoings don't match outgoings. What that means is the taxation revenue really isn't enough to meet the increasing demands of an ageing population. That's the reality that they're facing. Now, there are a number of ways to approach this issue. And the way the federal government has the journey the federal government is embarked on is a journey to increase productivity, okay? Making you work smarter and harder so you pay more taxes, or the organisations you work for pay more taxes, and that'll help to, you know, overcome the deficit which we as a nation currently face. Work harder, longer. So increasing productivity. Now, obviously, there are many ways that we can tackle the issues which face us as a nation. As there are a number of ways we can tackle the problems which evolve out of the atrocities which occurred on Bondi Beach a few days ago. There are many ways we can actually provide for the benefits of the bulk of the population. But we do have a problem. And that problem is ultimately related to the fact that Parliament has lost its autonomy. It has lost its sovereignty. For far too long, what we've seen is that the interests of that small section of society that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication come before the interests of the people parliamentarians represent in Parliament. And every time Parliament tries to pass minuscule reforms, as we saw with the superannuation reforms regarding people with more than 3 million in their superannuation fund, and we're not talking about the majority of Australians, but an insignificant minority, almost as insignificant as myself, what we are seeing is extraordinary pressures being placed on the federal government, which relies on its ability to be re-elected in 2.5 years' time, to not pass any legislation which will infringe on the ability of that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication to decrease their profitability. And what we've seen over the past 50 years during the deregulation, privatisation, globalisation and corporatisation revolution that has swept not just Australia but over the world, what we have seen is a decreasing number of people acquiring an increasing amount of wealth at the expense of the bulk of the population. So as Christmas draws near, we see the begging bowls come out to provide a meal, to provide food, to provide clothing, to provide shelter. And this is directly linked to the inability of governments to pass legislation to improve the lot of the majority of people. Because for far too long, we have seen corporate and investor interests put before the interests of the population at large. And to a significant degree, this has been able to occur because people are so concerned about their superannuation and their ability to retire that they are willing to accept the fact that there are over 2 million children living in poverty, that 33% of Australians live on a social security benefit, that over 30% of Australians have nothing in the bank at the end of the week. And the list goes on and on. That we have underfunded public health systems. Look at the number of people that have been treated in New South Wales public hospitals as a result of the mass murder which occurred on Sunday, and the number of people that were injured. Look at the resources that have been used. And these resources are being used, and people are not paying for these resources because of the struggles of people in the past to create a viable public health system which looks after the needs of the many, not the needs of the few. The private health sector is about cherry-picking the easy cases, the routine cases. It doesn't have the capacity to look after those that are critically injured, whether it's through the atrocities which occurred on a Sunday or a mass casualty situation. We rely on the public sector. And to see individuals and corporations with billions, hundreds of millions of dollars in assets not legally pay 1 cent in tax is galling. But what is more galling is the inability and the unwillingness of governments to tackle this problem. And to a significant degree, it's because we have allowed this to occur. We've accepted the idea there's no other way in order to create wealth, acquire wealth, and redistribute wealth, but through the current taxation system, which benefits the investment class, about 8% of the Australian population, and the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange, and communication. So what the government is now talking about is increasing productivity, because they don't actually have the ability to stop or make legislation to improve the tax system so that everybody pays their fair share of tax, not just pay as you earn taxpayers, where the majority of tax comes from. Almost 67% of every dollar of tax that is collected comes from a pay-as-you-earn taxpayer. It doesn't come from corporate tax. It doesn't come from excise and duties. The majority still comes from the pockets of working people. So they said, let's increase productivity. And the way they're going to increase productivity is to give loans to corporations to improve their infrastructure and resources to increase productivity, to put out more. So more of the same, more corporate welfare on an industrial scale, while we have charities who I have no issue with doing their best to fill the void which should have been taken up by governments decades ago. Poor old Robert Hawke, when he made his statement that no child will be living in poverty, I think, by the year 2000, will be turning his grave to see what's occurred in this country. Not that I've got much respect for Mr. Hawke, but that's a different story. So how are we going to increase productivity? Through more corporate welfare? We saw this during the COVID situation where businesses were given hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. They didn't need it all. They pocketed it. It's a little bit like you getting a Social Security benefit and somehow you get triple the amount for the next fortnight and the government says, oh, don't worry about it, mate. It's all yours. And this is what happened as far as corporate welfare is concerned. And what concerns me about corporate welfare is not the fact that taxpayers' money is given to private organisations, but the fact that the federal government never demands a seat on the board of those corporations. If I tried to take over a publicly listed company, or I bought shares in a publicly listed company, a significant number of shares, I would demand and receive a seat on the board, on the governing board of that particular corporation. But the federal government is giving away taxpayers' money to the aged care sector, the early childhood development sector, the renewable energy sector, aluminium, the coal industry, and the list goes on, and never asks for a seat on the board to see how that money, which is money that's derived in the majority of cases, almost 70% from pay-as-you-earn taxpayers, how that money is going to be used. So if they think you increase productivity by increasing corporate welfare, they need to think again. Because currently, what we are seeing, because of the taxation system, especially which is levied on tax, and the benefits you can receive taxation-wise by buying stocks and shares, what we are seeing that corporations are more interested in returning revenue to stockholders than using increasing profits to modernise their businesses. So what we're seeing is more and more profits being diverted to stockholders. And the fact is that today, almost 50% of all shares that are held in this country on the Australian Stock Exchange are held by superannuation companies, which use workers' superannuation entitlements to invest. So we've got this situation where if you increase corporate welfare, what will happen, as we saw during the COVID crisis, is that these corporations will pocket that money and use that money to pay dividends to their shareholders, not use that money to improve wages to their employees or use that money to expand and modernise their businesses. And that's the crux of the matter. So how do you increase productivity in a capitalist society which is dominated by corporations? Well, you need to grow the other two segments of the economy. Segments which have been allowed to wither and die on the vine. The first segment is the segment that's been privatised. All those essential services, including water, which have been privatised and put in the private market. That's a tragedy. The fact is, there is no longer any competition in Australia, any significant competition in Australia. It's disappeared, gone out the door. The private sector dominates every aspect of our existence. Telecommunications, airlines, private health, aged care sector, early childhood development, and the list goes on and on and on. So we no longer have any competition. And this is highlighted in the housing sector, where we see the rise and rise and rise of housing prices, where winning Tats Lotto these days doesn't even guarantee that you can buy a three-bedroom house within 20 kilometres of the CBD of a major city in this country. What a disaster, considering very few people win Tats Lotto. What a disaster. So we're seeing this idea that there is no competition between the public and private sector. When the Commonwealth Bank was owned by the state, we saw real competition between the private banks and the Commonwealth banks. And the government could, through legislation, ensure that competition occurred. But once the Commonwealth Bank was privatised, competition between the private banks is non-existent. And when you're told to change your account, think of all the hurdles that are put in your way regarding changing that account from one bank to another. So there's no competition. And when you look at the housing sector, there is no competition. There is no longer a significant public housing sector. And whatever's left of the public housing sector around this country is being slowly privatised and rapidly privatised in Victoria. So there is no competition between the public and private sector. So what's the third tier of the economy, the tier that nobody ever talks about? A tier that only has 2,000 registered organisations, and that's the cooperative and collective sector. Now, if you're part of a cooperative or a collective, your ability to raise money in the private sector is non-existent. You need to raise that money among your members, and obviously that limits what you can do. Having a cooperative and collective sector in a capitalist society which is almost non-existent, which provides no real competition to the private sector, is a handbrake on increasing productivity. Now, something which I've been talking about now for almost 20 years, and obviously nobody takes any notice, is providing seeding funding for cooperatives and collectives. Cooperatives and collectives are a significant way in which you can get people involved in producing goods and services in a way that can increase productivity. But you have to start these organisations with seeding funding. And there is no seeding funding. There is seeding funding for corporate welfare, billions of dollars. But there is not $1 available to the cooperative and collective sector as seeding funding to develop cooperatives and collective as a third tier of the Australian economy. So what I'm suggesting is a 1% levy on superannuation contributions to be used to provide seeding funding for cooperatives and collectives who will then pay off that loan, pay interest on that loan, and that loan then generates further income for that superannuation fund. Now, some cooperatives and collectives will fail, like many private businesses fail, but many will survive and many will expand and provide real competition in a capitalist society. To allow corporations to dominate every aspect of our existence is a recipe for disaster. And we see that disaster now. You walk into any temple of consumption around the country and you'll see the same brands And many of those brands, although they seem independent, will belong to one entity that owns 20 or 30 of those brands. So there's no real competition. And although the government is passing legislation regarding Woolworths and Coles, the fact is there's still no real competition in those sectors. And if there's no competition, there will be no increased productivity. Because as I said before, profits are being funneled into the pockets of people who own shares. They're not being used to reward staff with bonuses or improve their wages and conditions. They're not being used to modernise equipment. In many regards, we find ourselves at the back of the pack in this country because I think we're one of the two or very few sovereign nation states which provides a taxation benefit for anybody who buys a stock or share. Just extraordinary. Same thing occurs as far as the housing sector is concerned and all the taxation advantages you can get if you own two or three or four or five or 20 homes. Just an extraordinary state of affairs. But ultimately, to a significant degree, we can lay the blame not at the foot of governments, but we can lay the blame at ourselves because we have decided as a people that it's all too hard. Governments know what they're doing. We're more interested as a people in pursuing policies which divide us, pursuing policies which somehow delineate the enemy is somebody, as I said before, wearing different clothes or a different gender or a different sexuality or the list goes on and on, or a different race or a different colour or a different language. For far too long, movements in this country have not been willing to challenge the idea that power no longer resides in Parliament, if ever did. Power resides in the hands of that small section of society that owns and controls the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. And while we continue to bicker amongst ourselves regarding individual issues, nothing will change. I can see mass movements being created about immigration, and I can see mass movements being created about religious affiliation, and I can see mass movements being created against, you know, identity politics. But I don't see even minuscule movements being created which challenge the very premise that this society is based on: private investment for private profit. I don't see tens of thousands of people, as I said last week, talking about the issues which confront us. Things like childhood poverty, inability to access housing, and the list goes on and on. It's all too hard. And to a significant degree, this has occurred over a number of generations, because the few organisations which we had in society which protected us from the worst excesses of the capitalist society, a private investment for private profit society, the trade union movement has been legislated away, where the ability of a trade union to do anything its ability to do anything is not there. There's not even a right to strike in this country. You can only remove your labour during enterprise bargaining agreement period. And if you go on a wildcat strike, the individual worker can be fined $20,000 a day. Who's going to put up with a $20,000 a day fine? And it's all legal. And at the same time, the very organisations which were there, which protected us to some degree, the religious-based organisations, the churches, the mosques, the synagogues, the temples, have been absorbed into the system. They've been absorbed into the system by the creation of a society where elements or services which should be provided by the state have now been outsourced to these organisations. And these organisations are now financially dependent. Financially dependent on government contracts. And in these government contracts, they don't even have the ability to complain about the worst excesses. So we see as the charities and religious-based institutions that provided services are incorporated into the system itself and bought over by government grants, we find ourselves in a situation where the institutions and organisations which did protect Australians in the past no longer protect us. It's a difficult situation. It's made more difficult, as I said, by the atrocities that have occurred on Bondi Beach. But the fact is that we need to address this situation because it's not getting any better. It's getting worse. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. There are many podcasts there. I will be broadcasting through the summer break. I will be pre-recording the program on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. But we will continue to broadcast across the summer break. I mean, news doesn't stop. Analysis doesn't stop. All I can say is that we are entering an exceptionally difficult period in this country's history, and I'll talk about that next week. And it's important that those of us who still think, not believe, who still think that the way forward is by creating a more egalitarian community, that we continue to be involved in that struggle. Because cynicism, as I keep saying, is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. And to be cynical in a time of universal deceit is to acquiesce to that small section of society that determines the political, social and cultural agenda in this country. And irrespective of the rantings of the buffoon in Washington, the fact is that ultimately democracy or direct democracy is not rule of the people, by the people, for the people. A democracy is rule of the people, by the people, for the people, by an engaged public. And as the public, and we are the public, we are the many, If we do not become engaged in that struggle to break down the power of those who wish to divide and rule us, nothing will ever change. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3CR.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.